Hey everybody, welcome to Chiefs Live, brought to you by your Midwest Ford dealers. Josh Looney, Brad Young with you live from One Arrowhead Drive for the last time, probably.
Ever.
What, until last time ever? Until at least the end of August, because the next time we're live to you will be Friday night after the first practice of Chiefs training camp. We are just 1 week away. Brad and I report to camp here next week. The players will be coming in Thursday. Friday practices start, and of course we'll be live with you following every single practice throughout training camp.
It's the What's cool about the training camp is you don't have to wait till every Tuesday at noon to see this face.
I thought you were going to say it's the soft serve ice cream cones they give us in the cafeteria there.
That's good as well. But if you want to see this face, you're going to wait till every Thursday. Every night of the week, except for Saturdays and Sundays, you can see this guy's face for free. On the internet.
For free. We need to charge admission for that. We'll be after every Chiefs practice. Looking for times TBA coming up. It's about 150 degrees out there, and right now Romeo's got the boys scheduled to practice every day at 3:30. Mm-hmm. Just me using some general logic here. If it stays as hot as it is, we might see some changes to the schedule. Maybe it could happen. So, again, all those times are always subject to change, so make sure you check KCChiefs.com. If you're coming out every day, each week, we're going to give you the training camp schedule if things change because of weather. And of course this will be the same here on this show. We'll let you know each day, because we're going to be out of practice, so we need to make sure that we are able to carry the same schedule. So weather permitting, it's super hot in Kansas City, so make sure you check KCChiefs.com. We'll have any update to any changes to the practice schedule. Right now it is how it is, but they're scheduled to practice at 3:30 every day, and it's supposed to be at about 115 degrees next week, so we'll see what happens.
I think you're rounding up.
I'm slowly going up.
You were going back. You said 150, that's 115. It is hot. These guys are finely tuned physical machines.
I ran into Gary Lezak, the weatherman at 41 News, yesterday at the gym. Okay? And he said...
Name dropper.
Right.
You're
here.
Such
I'm
a name dropper.
Name dropper. But here's what he said. He said this weekend, he thinks it's going to get... It was either tomorrow or this weekend. It's supposed to get to 111. But he only told his viewers 109, because he didn't want to cause a panic if you get into 110 or above.
He's a kind man.
Me, I round up. 115, 150, that's what we're going with. It's hot out there, Chiefs training camp. Anyway, it's our Chiefs training camp preview show. We're going to get you ready for all the position battles to watch, what's going on. And why don't we start out with the topic of the week, Dwayne Bowe. My chair's falling apart here too, Brad. We seen some new chairs we're trading. About a minute here live. Dwayne Bowe, the franchise deadline passes on Monday without a long-term deal. Under the new CBA, there's actually been some confusion with Chiefs fans about what's up for him next, what he can do, what he can't do. The main difference this year in the CBA, yeah, I know, it's falling apart. I got no place to put it. The main difference for the CBA with Dwayne Bowe this year is the fact that the Chiefs cannot revisit a long-term deal with him until after the 2012 season is complete. Now, in past deadlines under the old CBA, you might recall Tony Gonzalez skipping all of the 2002 training camp, holding out for a long-term deal, signing in September a 7-year contract extension with the Chiefs. That type of thing can't happen. You might remember way back, the very first guy to ever get franchised in Chiefs history, Neil Smith, 1993. He sits out all of training camp, and then shortly before the opener, which was Joe Montana's opener as well, before the 93 season against Tampa Bay, Neil Smith goes in and signs what was called back then a series of one-year contracts before he ends up going and playing for the Chiefs that year. Those things can't happen with Dwayne Bowe. He has one option and one option only, and that's to sign the one-year franchise tender worth about $9.5 million. That's what Dwayne Bowe has to do. There is no other option. He cannot revisit a long-term deal with the Chiefs until after the 2012 season. So that is a little bit confusing to some fans, because we're used to the holdouts and not signing a contract. They can still get that long-term deal done. That can't happen under the new CBA. So what's next for Dwayne? The ball is in his court. If he doesn't want to report to training camp, he will not be fined. A player cannot be fined if he's not under contract. He has not signed his one-year franchise tender. Therefore, he is not under contract right now. When Dwayne Bowe starts losing money, is to make it simple, players are paid divided by 17, their yearly salary. So if you make $17 million for the year, Brad, you would get $1 million following each week's game. 17-week season with the bye week included, you're paid on the bye week. So if Dwayne held out through training camp, he's not going to lose any money. in his own pocket. He could sign that come for the season opener. If he were to hold out past the season opener, which would be extremely unlikely, that's when he would actually start losing money off of his contract. So that's kind of the Dwayne Bowe situation. The ball is in his court right now. Really, both sides have been extremely quiet. We haven't heard anything from Dwayne. We haven't heard anything from Dwayne's agent, and we haven't heard anything from the Chiefs or Scott Pioli. So it's kind of just kind of wait and see. Does Dwayne Bowe come for the start of camp? Does he wait a little bit through camp? Does he wait up until the season opener? Or in an extreme case, does he sit out the entire 2012 season? There's also one other wild card that could happen, Brad. I'll put it in there because it's possible. It's never happened before in the history of the franchise tag. Dwayne Bowe can still sign with another team. However,
you're getting fans real excited.
The Chiefs would, that's why I preface it, it's never happened. The Chiefs would
have
the right to match that offer. Mm-hmm. And if they didn't, they'd get two first-round draft picks for Dwayne Bowe. That's the reason that those things never happen. I should put out there that's a possibility kind of when you read through the CBA. I'm trying to make it as simple as possible. But the main thing is the only thing Dwayne Bowe can play under this year is that one-year franchise tender. He won't lose any money out of his pocket until the first game of the regular season if he remains unsigned.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously these are just – they're not exactly cold, hard facts as far or opinion or anything. This is basically just how the CBA works. But when it really comes down to it, there's a lot – always rumors swirling. There's always all kinds of stuff. You heard all the rumors with a lot of guys who signed this week, like Drew Brees, Ray Rice, Matt Forte. You know, you heard, you know, trade rumors about Drew Brees and this and this and that. All that stuff is all smokescreen. So as a fan – as a Dwayne Bowe fan, as a Chiefs fan myself, I try to not buy into the rumors, sit back, and let the professionals take care of what they need to take care of. And when he does get back on the field, cheer for him like he never left.
What's interesting, too, Brad, when you look at the Chiefs and their franchise tag history, seven guys have been tagged. Dwayne Bowe was the seventh in team history. And in all these settings, some of them have had drama. And I guess you could call this drama since he didn't get the long-term deal. He hasn't really held out of anything except for the offseason program. And like you said, I'm just going through the CBA. I have no idea what Dwayne's plans are. He could sign it any minute. He could sign it while the show's going on now. Like I said, we haven't heard anything from the Chiefs. We haven't heard anything from Dwayne Bowe. And quite frankly, I'd probably rather it be that way than some drama through the media that you read of every day on both sides. So really, everyone's kind of in the dark of what's going on. But that's okay. No one's bickering in public. But if you look at the history of the Chiefs and their franchise players, there's been some drama involved with holdouts, but in the long term, everything's worked out, with the exception of Dan Williams, who set out the entire 98 season, but then, oddly, after sitting out an entire season, signs a contract extension with the Chiefs in 1999. Dan Williams, remember, he had that good sack season in 97. He ended up coming back, having about 12 sacks the next 2 years, but had some knee issues and injuries shortened his career. But with the exception of him, the other five instances with the Chiefs and the franchise tag, even with drama, has worked out for the franchise. Tony Gonzalez signs long-term. Will Shields played under a one-year franchise tag before signing long-term. Neil Smith held out, then signed long-term. Jared Allen had about as much drama as you can get. The only franchise player to leave the team, and it was by trade, not through free agency. But the Chiefs get three draft picks for that. Jamal Charles, Brandon Albert, two of your cornerstone players, and DeJuan Morgan was the third. So you could argue that that worked out for the Chiefs as well, especially with everyone pumped about Jamal Charles returning for camp. And then Tom Bahali, obviously, last year ends up signing the long-term deal about a week into camp, missed a few days of practice. So you look at the history of the Chiefs and the franchise tag, I guess if you want to look for the light at the end of the tunnel, is really this franchise, things have worked out well for it with them and their franchise players. There hasn't ever been a thing where he said, oh, man, that was a disaster afterwards. It seems to work out in the long run, and I would think that most people think it's going to work out with Dwayne Bowe in the long run. So whether Dwayne Bowe is or is not with the Chiefs when they start training camp, there are still a lot of things to look for, especially in that wide receiver core, Brad, because whether Bowe's there or if he's not there, and if he's not there, then this guy will be even more in the spotlight. Jonathan Baldwin, probably the MVP of the Chiefs offseason program. Spectacular catches, looked like a number one receiver. He was playing that number one.
He has all the physical tools.
He was playing that number one receiver in Dwayne Bowe's absence, mm-hmm. Made catch after catch after catch. Now he's going to have to do it with the press coverage, with the pads on. And that's one thing I think all fans that come out to training camp, and something you and I are going to be watching, is Jonathan Baldwin. Can he continue what he showed without the pads and OTAs when the pads come on in St. Joe?
And I think a guy like Jonathan Baldwin, everyone was so excited to see him in training camp last season, because even coming out, he wasn't, for a first round pick, he wasn't that talked about. Not saying coaches and everyone didn't like him, but he wasn't, anytime you go to the playoffs, like we did in 2010, you're going to pick later in the draft, and some of those guys aren't the high marquee names that, you know, your Cam Newtons and this and that. But I remember Jonathan Baldwin from the Combine. I remember talking about it even a year ago. The guy's a physical specimen. The guy went to Pitt. He actually spent his summers practicing with the team and a lot of other former Pitt legends like Darrell Revis. And Revis had such good things to say about this guy and how he's going to be an absolute freak show in the NFL someday. Now, he did miss quite a few games last season at the beginning because of the hand injury. But once he started to come on, like in the San Diego game you're seeing, I think fans really, really got excited once he and Matt Castle got on the field together. And then Matt got injured, and it was just kind of unfortunate. They were rolling in different quarterbacks, playing with Mr. Baldwin. So it's a tough place. It was a tough rookie season for him because he wasn't on the field for the entire, wasn't practicing all year long. He played with, I think it was three different quarterbacks. There was on the fourth. I think there was only three different quarterbacks he was playing with in an offensive system.
You must have been boarding the Ricky Stanzi train, like Stanzi Nation.
No,
he would have been the fourth had he played. Yeah, you had Palko.
Just saying, Matt Castle. When it comes down to it, the guy had quite a roller coaster season for a first-round draft pick coming out. And I think with the stability he's had in the offseason, the full offseason program this year, because keep in mind, last year a lot of these rookies didn't have the full offseason program like these guys are having this year, and all the OTAs and all that, and all the working with the team and all that stuff. And I'm really excited to see the guy, too. I think the guy has the skills and the talent, and having a healthy Matt Castle, beefed up offensive line, the sky's the limit for this guy.
Yeah, he certainly did exactly what you wanted to see out of him in the offseason program. I said the offensive MVP, play after play after play. He made the acrobatic catches. He made the simple ones like that over the middle, the intermediate routes you want to see. A very good offseason for John the Ball. We look to see if he can continue that progress into training camp in St. Joseph. The wide receiver cast as a whole is very interesting, and one of the interesting position battles people are billing is Dexter McCluster versus Devin Wiley for that slot position. I'm going to go out there and say, Brad, a lot of people are assuming that Dexter McCluster's days as a running back are over. I think that is a bad assumption to make. If you remember, Romeo Cornell was almost exploratory in his comments with using Dexter McCluster in the slot this offseason. Keep in mind, Brian Daboll loves matchups. He loves versatility and versatile players. Dexter McCluster is the ultimate matchup player. Dable's going to find the best place week in and week out to put Dexter, whether it's at running back, whether it's at wide receiver. I think he'll line up at both this year. He may end up starting at training camp, especially if Dwayne Bowe isn't there for the start of training camp, staying at that slot receiver, because let's think about it. If you have Breston and Baldwin both on the outside, and you've got a rookie in Devin Wiley trying to find his way as a slot, you can put a veteran at McCluster there. If Bo comes back, it brings another conversation. Does Breston move inside? Does Baldwin move inside? Which one of those two guys goes and plays a little bit of slot? We saw Baldwin actually working on the slot a lot last season. Devin Wiley's another factor. If he comes on the way the Chiefs do, and I think he's going to make a big impact on special teams as a return man early, but if Devin Wiley shows that he's ready to take offensive snaps and significant snaps at the slot, what does that do for McCluster as well? Then you get into the conversation of Cyrus Gray. Is he healthy? Where does he fit in? So McCluster, I view as, I think he's going to be playing running back. I think he's going to be playing wide receiver. And I think he's going to be kind of, if you have a full healthy roster with Jonathan Baldwin, Dwayne Bowe, Steve Breston, Devin Wiley doing what fans hope he does, Cyrus Gray in the mix, Peyton Hillis, Jamal Charles, look at that talent right there. That allows Brian Daboll to take Dexter McCluster and move him wherever he wants as a matchup-specific player. And that's where the Chiefs can be most dangerous. And enough of the talk for some media and some fans of Dexter McCluster having to fight for a position on this team. Dexter McCluster is very much a part of this team's plans, and it's because Brian Daboll loves versatile players, and he's going to find a way to use this man. Hopefully he's the ultimate wild card.
And with Brian Daboll's history, every place that he's been, he is so good at finding the strengths of specific players and specific offenses and cater them to him, just like you just said. Look at Reggie Bush last season. He literally, everyone was trying to make Reggie Bush a north and south runner until he got to Miami with Brian. And they got to the point where they basically just said, he is what he is, and let's make it work. And he had the best season of his life, best season of his NFL career so far. Same thing with Hillis in Cleveland. He really, I think he has this really fantastic ability to discover in players what their maximum, how he could get the maximum output out of them. And he puts them into, he does what good coaches do, and he puts players in positions to succeed. And we have so many different offensive weapons with the Chiefs coming up this year that it's a good problem to have, but I think you have so many different unique types of talents as well with Devin Wiley, McCluster. You've got guys like Hillis. You've got guys like Jamal. Not to mention the tight end factor of everything we have on the offensive side of the ball. You could cater a lot of things and packages to specific players, but there are so many weapons that I'm just happy I'm not going to have to be a defensive coordinator going up against a lot of those weapons.
Well, and,
because you really don't know what's going to come at you at any time, because Brian Daboll's known that way too. You know, he's not running, you know, college systems or something like that, but he's very unpredictable. Very unpredictable for a good way. I mean, I hate to bring it up, but don't you remember what Miami did against us last year?
That's what I was saying.
And that was at the point of the season when the Chiefs D was one of the top in the league for that stretch, and they're playing really, really, really well. And Brian Daboll isn't afraid to think outside of the box a little bit and throw some things at you they haven't seen before, and then by the time you address that, he's throwing you another curveball. And it's just, I like that offensive mentality, that confidence that he has in his guys, and put them in a position to succeed continuously throughout the game. Like, depending on no matter what happens, the guy's constantly shifting and adjusting different things. He seems like an OC who's one step ahead of the other person. It's got to be frustrating as a defense playing against that guy.
Well, one thing that Daboll did a lot against the Chiefs and what he did last year was the use of Charles Clay, which we'll talk about the fullback position here. He used a hybrid player in Charles Clay last year where it really, what it would do is this guy, he's almost like a Tomoyaki type receiving tight end, but he's a fullback as well. And so what that does is it keeps teams, it forces teams to categorize him as something. Mm-hmm. So do you come out in your base defense because you're going to treat him as a fullback? Okay, Brian Daboll's going to go and put him on the outside and try and match him up one-on-one against your linebackers. Charles Clay had a nice day against the Chiefs doing that. Okay, are you going to bring in your nickel package and treat Charles Clay as a wide receiver that you need to have maybe a defensive back, a guy like Jaleel Brown last year, a guy like John McGraw to man up on? Okay, we're going to put him back at fullback in that case, and we're going to run it right up your gut. Those are the things where Brian Daboll uses the versatile players he has to his advantage, and that's where I think he likes a lot about Dexter McCluster, and we're going to see a lot of different things, especially if the Chiefs are fully healthy. At the fullback position, though, what are they going to do there? That's another interesting position. I think it's the number one camp battle this season in St. Joe, and it's not just because of the two players there, because it extends beyond those two players. So Brian Daboll in Cleveland, when he had Peyton Hillis there, he went for a traditional blocking fullback, Lawrence Vickers, as traditional as a fullback as you can get. 3 yards, clava dust. I'm going to take the ISO block and I'm going to try and maul over.
And as far as running the football, it worked.
And
it worked
well.
Really well.
So that's what he did in Cleveland. And as I just described, what he did last season with a different type of player in Charles Clay in Miami. So here you can see Shane Bannon. He's one of the players, a 7th-round pick out of Yale, injured last year on the practice squad. He's trying to be one of the traditional fullbacks on this roster. And his main competition is Taylor Gentry, a hard-nosed rookie free agent out of NC State. If the Chiefs go with just that alone, you have two players that are inexperienced. Between them two, that's a great position battle as it is. However, what about the versatility? Well, what if he doesn't want to go with the traditional fullback this year and he wants to kind of keep that Charles Clay mentality? Well, you've got a guy like Jake O'Connell who's been on this roster for 3 or 4 years and not really found his place, but they've lined him up in the backfield at times as a fullback, motioned him out of there. Can he be a guy that maybe you do something with that? Tim Beare, for UKU fans, a tight end, a rookie free agent out of Kansas, he could possibly be that fullback slash tight end mold of a player. Or how about the wild card at the end of the day? We mentioned McCluster. We mentioned Cyrus Gray. We mentioned Jamal Charles. Peyton Hillis. They haven't played him at fullback, Brad, at all this offseason, but we haven't seen him in the same backfield as Jamal Charles. This would be a guy who can catch the football, who can run the football, who you could have him and Jamal Charles there at the same time and have so many options open for running the ball, but also a guy who's been the starting fullback in this league who's not afraid to maul over somebody or be a lead blocker. We haven't seen Peyton Hillis line up at the fullback just yet, but we haven't seen Jamal and Peyton in the same backfield either. And I think that's another question that's going to factor in this fullback position. Does Daboll have any inclination whatsoever of giving Hillis some fullback snaps? And how does that factor into that whole position battle at that fullback spot?
What's really interesting about the whole Peyton Hillis, Jamaal Charles thing is they're two similar running backs in one way, but they're totally different in another way. But both of them have one thing in common. If you don't know how they're going to be used, or you don't know how they're lining up, their flank, if they're going in motion, whatever they're going to do, when you see either of those guys in the backfield, your defense is obviously keying on these guys just to see what they're going to do, because you've seen it a ton with Jamaal Charles. If you're a safety or if you're a linebacker and you take a bad angle on Jamaal Charles, he is taking it to the house, just like he spun around Eric Weddle right there. He'll spin you around. And in the same regard with a guy like Peyton Hillis, if you don't get a proper angle on him or you misread something, if you don't if you don't have time to get your yourself square, he's just going to run you over, like I think he's about to do right here. Yeah, just literally he will run you over if you don't have time to get up and square up as well. But in addition, Peyton Hillis also has amazing hands. That's what a lot of people don't talk about, but a lot of people that I talk to who are actually Browns fans really, really like Peyton Hillis because, yeah, he's known as, you know, he's a mauler. He runs the ball and jumps over dudes like that. It really it comes down to it that the guy had close to 800 yards receiving. Is that accurate? That one season that he was on the Madden
2010,
cover.
61 receptions, Brian, he had that season. And people think that Dexter McCluster's active out of the back.
Really, 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 really good hands.
Those are guys that had 40-something catches. The Chiefs haven't had a running back catch over 60 passes. You have to go back to like 02 and Priest Holmes.
If you think about it from a play-calling perspective.
And those are screens.
The only experience I have calling plays is playing Madden at home, and I'm not even that good. The computer beats me all the time. But if I was going to be calling plays, you want a guy like Peyton Hillis, who people are like, well, they got Peyton Hillis and Jamaal Charles is out, they're probably going to run it up the middle, they're going to do this. Play action, dump it off to that guy, runs it for 20 yards. They did that in Cleveland all of the time, and it always worked. And guess what? Maybe they thought they were going to do a play action, they thought they were going to do a pass. Guess what? They're going to dump it off. Or they'll hit him in the flat for something, and he has really, really good hands. And a guy like that who could not only run the ball, catch the ball, but the guy's a moose. When he was in Arkansas, he was the fullback. He played fullback in Denver, so the guy obviously knows how to block. He has all the different tools. Now I'm talking individually. If you put that combo up with he and Jamaal in the backfield in some sort of Chiefs dream set, I could like see people grinning looking into their computers and now thinking about those two guys in the backfield together. If you're a defensive coordinator, outside of bringing Mean Joe Green back in to play defense alongside Deacon Jones, I don't know how you stop that. I really don't.
And that's a great point with Hillis and what he was able to do in the run game with Cleveland and Brian Daboll in 2010. The Chiefs, though, have so many more offensive weapons around for the passing game where you can get Cleveland's offense is pretty one-dimensional in that run game. They didn't have a whole lot of receivers. And what do you have? You had Seneca Wallace at quarterback and Muhammad Massaquoi and those types of guys as your receivers. The Chiefs have so many. This was Hillis where defenses were keying on him. There was no Jamaal Charles next to him. There was no Dexter McCluster, Jonathan Baldwin, Dwayne Bowe, and he still put together that type of a season under Daboll, and that, I think, is what has a lot of people excited about the Chiefs offense heading in to the 2012 campaign. Jamaal Charles has been here in town this week. I actually saw him at the practice facility. Brad and I were coming back from a nice, tasty firehouse sub over here at by the stadium, and we came in. Jamaal was getting his car. He just finished up his workout, and I actually just looked out in the backyard before I came. And by backyard, I mean the practice fields from the office, Brad. And Jamaal was out there running wind sprints on the it's like 105 degrees out right now. And he wasn't on the grass. He was on the AstroTurf. There's the hill that Priest Holmes made famous. And he was on the actual AstroTurf running sprint. So Jamaal is here. He's ready to go. He's ready to play. I guess a question a lot of people would say, how soon do they just let him go? Do they unleash the guy? Is he going to be a guy that eases into camp and maybe goes light the first week, a little bit more the second, doesn't play in the first preseason game? Or is he a guy that plays in the preseason game just like any player would? Is he a player that week one, he's getting his 15 to 20 carries? Or is it week one, Peyton Hillis is getting 15 to 20 touches and Jamaal is going to be 8 to 12? And builds up, and by week 10, it's Jamaal 15 to 20, and Peyton Hillis 10, 11, 12, whatever it may be. I actually posed that question on KCChiefs.com this week, and I got a lot of feedback from fans. I think most fans want to see Jamal on the field, but they also want to make sure they know what this guy's mentality is like, and they know that he's going to go a million miles an hour as soon as he gets on the field. And this preseason, they kind of want him to just, look, man, you're going to be good. Make sure you're where you need to be, but don't kill yourself. And so I wonder how the Chiefs are going to approach the workload for Charles and Hillis.
It's interesting, and it's not just with our team and a lot of guys who were injured last year. There were a lot of players that were injured early in the season last year. And the mentality of players coming out, it's always really interesting to see because those guys are hungry and you don't want them to get re-injured because you see that happen a lot with a lot of players who are so ambitious and they're sitting around, you're rehabbing and you're wondering, you can't wait to get back on the field, you can't wait to get back on the field, but you got to have a good coach, a good trainer to ease you back into it. Otherwise, you don't want anything to happen again. But that's going to be an interesting storyline, not just with the Chiefs, but with the entire NFL. How a lot of teams handle players coming back. And it's not just in the preseason. Even getting into the season, you're talking guys like Rashard Mendenhall with the Steelers, Adrian Peterson. A lot of these guys who are going to be coming back in the middle of the season, almost at the earliest, did a lot of projections. People like, oh, they'll be back week six at the earliest. You wonder how 100% those guys are going to be because you get 6 weeks in, you're in week 12, week 13, they get injured again, they're out for another year. You know what I'm saying? So if you're a team, it's tough because you want to get in there and you want to, you know, win. I'm not even talking about the Chiefs. I'm talking about some of those other teams. But a lot of times, depending on what the injury is, you got to make sure that it's 100% healed because the likelihood of you re-injuring it is a lot higher if you already have. So I think the team, and I think a lot of the teams in the NFL, handle that because they're professionals. They went to school for doctorism, not journalism. So... I have full faith, but I love the
degree.
I love what you said about Jamal though, because he does have that mindset. He is hungry. He wants to get out there and do it. And I love having to hold the player back and be like, no, you can't do this, as compared to trying to get the guy motivated to go do it, because he's got that fire.
Love it, doctors, and that old surgical procedures they do on those knees. And you know what, Jamal, the big knock on him has been he can't ever be a 25 carry back. He can't ever be a 20-carry running back, Brad, and I actually did some research this week, and I was really surprised with what I found. Jamal, when he's had 7 games in his career where he's gotten 20 or more carries in those games, 7.1 yards per carry he averages when he get in a game where he gets 20-plus carries. That's more than less than 20. He only averages 5.6 yards per carry in games that he – doesn't get 20. So the knock on him is, and maybe he can't withstand a workload of being a 25 carry runner every single game for a season, but when he gets that opportunity, it's ridiculous. 7.1 yards per carry in games where he's getting 25 carries, 22 carries, 23 carries, it's incredible. It shows that he doesn't wear down when he has to shoulder a rushing load, and of course he's very good regardless with the 5.6 in the other games he's played. Peyton Hillis, there's been 10 times that he has gotten 20 or more carries in a game over his career, and 9 times out of those 10, he's got 94 yards or more. Peyton Hillis, another guy who excels with a heavy workload. This Chiefs team, Brad, if Jamal comes healthy and they find the right mix of thunder and lightning or whatever fans want to call it, this could be 2010, man. And if 2010, you've got the number one rushing attack in the league, 164.1 yards per game, the Chiefs average. They dipped. Without Jamal, they weren't home run hitters. They were singles hitters last year. And it dipped all the way down to 15th in the league, 118 rushing yards per game. If you're 164 and you can get back to that, and I'd like to think that Peyton Hillis can do a little bit more than Thomas Jones did in 2010. And Jones was good, very good, at least for the first half of 2010. I'd like to think Hillis at his stage of his career has more in the tank than Thomas Jones did. People talk about Matt Cassel. Can he handle it? All you got to do is be a game manager. If you're putting 164 yards a game on the ground, you're playing defense the way people think this Chiefs defense is going to be. If you get a rushing attack that's like that 2010 rushing attack, that's a recipe for a lot of success for the Kansas City Chiefs.
I 100% agree. And as we segue, I'm going to do a little shameless plug for our ticket people, which I know you love and they love too.
You want to be there? for the opening day.
You want to be there? You want to see this ground and pounded attacked? You want to see a rushing game that would make a guy like Tom Osborne drool? Get your season. Single game tickets are on sale for everybody now, which is great. They just were on sale. A lot of Chiefs fans, your diehard fans, you automatically know the schedule in your head.
Make Tom Osborne drool. I like that.
That's what I'm talking
about. You just come out the top of your head? Yes. You were thinking about this yesterday, weren't you?
Yep. A lot of awesome home games this year. You want to come see Cam Newton, Carolina Panthers. I'm just going to read these through because a lot of you diehard fans are like, B-Rad, stop. I realize the schedule. A lot of people don't realize that you got teams like Falcons, Chargers, you got the Ravens coming into town. Like I said, the Carolina Panthers. You've got the Indianapolis Colts coming into town. Andrew Luck coming into town. You got a lot of really, really awesome home games. And I would highly suggest, if there are a lot of those games, obviously Broncos, Raiders, all those games are going to be a lot of fun. But if you're really interested in those games, get the tickets early. Don't wait. Because although there's not a bad seat in the house, you don't want to sit up in the corner. You don't want to sit up there.
If you're interested in single games, you might as well get them now and not wait till later if you want to come to Atlanta, because people rush. I mean, you already had the Jackson County pre-sale. Yesterday was a big ticket day for the Chiefs, because a lot of people, let's face it, they for whatever reason, maybe they can't make it. Maybe it's not their budget. They don't want to do the full season, so they wait for that season, the single game tickets. So actually, a lot of the really good seats.
And people are pumped. Tickets are just the vibe I've been getting. People are buying up a lot of tickets. And as a final plug, we could get back to talking about rushing. This guy's foamy. He just wants to talk football.
actually, I like it when you come up with cool catch lines like Tom Osborne's drool.
Single game tickets, they've got the divisional three-pack. Say you don't really care who else they play. I mean, you love them. You want to see them at home, but you want to see them play all the divisional teams. You get the three-pack of there. There's a pick five plan where you go to one preseason game and then four regular season games, all that kind of stuff. Check out kcchiefs.com. Click on tickets, and they will all that information is right there. But like I said, tons of good stuff, tons of cool packages and all that kind of stuff. And honestly, if you still buy season tickets, the last time we did this plug-in, you were making fun of me. It's like the last day you could order your season ticket. You could order your tickets and get your jersey before the opening day. If you buy season tickets today, you call our boys upstairs. You could still get a jersey. You could still get a personalized jersey. You won't have it by the Falcons game, but you could still get it. You can get your Hillis jersey. And if you really want, you can get it's personalized. You get the back of it to say Looney Rules. RULZ.
I think you can only get like
on the back, and if you find him on game day, he has to take a picture with you. If you get that Looney Rules jersey,
you know what? We'll even send you an autographed 8x10 of Chiefs. Like, all right, Brad's taking pictures over. But really, though, in all seriousness, and Brad actually laid out all your options. Single game tickets went on sale yesterday. If you're interested,
and the jerseys are still free. They're still giving jerseys away.
Especially if you want to go to that season opener against Atlanta. I'm telling you, tickets are moving quick, so go ahead and get to that. It's a great opportunity to pick your game and go in that direction. Let's round up the offense, Brad, with some of the position battles I'm looking for. I'll go with one where I'm not so sure it's going to be a position battle, but it's one externally a lot of media talks about. A lot of people nationally that don't follow the Chiefs in and out talk about, and it's basically because Mike Mayock, when the Chiefs drafted Jeff Allen, immediately said Jeff Allen will be a day one starter and knock out Ryan Lilje out of that starting left guard post. So is Jeff Allen going for a starting position on the Chiefs offensive line? Well, as you can see, Jeff right there did not participate in the majority of OTAs. In fact, this is a guy who's been so durable throughout his college career. 47 consecutive games started offensive tackle Illinois, comes out and had an ankle injury in his very first practice with the Chiefs during OTAs, was in a walking boot for 2 weeks. So he started off a little bit behind. Ryan Lilje was the starting left guard throughout the entire offseason program as it is. In addition, I would say Ryan Lilje is also a guy who is the unquestioned leader of this offensive line inside the meeting room. And what I mean by that, and even Eric Winston has said that he knew that when he came in, it's a guy with Super Bowl ring. It's a guy with a lot of experience. It's a guy who's played in different offenses. It's a guy who's a smart player, a ton of knowledge. So he is a guy who's the unquestioned leader of this group. People turn to Ryan Lilje for advice. You look at the history of the Chiefs, and I think Jeff Allen has a chance to make a push for a starting role. But at the same time, you look at the history of what the Chiefs have done with their draft picks, especially offensive linemen. Let's go to John Osamoah. He kind of learns behind Brian Waters for 1 year, Chiefs release Brian Waters. Asamoah becomes a starter. Rodney Hudson learns behind Casey Wigman for 1 year, becomes a starter this season. Ryan Lilgers is in the final year of his contract that he signed 3 years ago. There's a history there that shows that, possibly they could take the same approach with Jeff Allen. Also that goes into the Jeff Allen talk, Brad, is the Chiefs are still looking for a swing tackle. And Jeff Allen, while he's playing guard, did play tackle in college. And you wonder how that battle goes out, if there's any chance that Allen will shift over to the tackle position. At tackle, you know the Chiefs are set at their starters. Eric Winston on the right side, Brendan Albert on the left side. Pass there, it's wide open for who's going to be the backup offensive tackle. And look, a million things could happen. You could sign a guy during camp. You could that gets cut. At the end of training camp, there could be a guy that gets cut you sign that's a veteran. Donald Stevenson is a raw player, tons of upside, probably needs some more time in this offense before he can really compete for a ton of playing time. But if he shows a lot of this preseason, maybe he is the swing tackle to start. David Mims, a huge guy who was on the practice squad last year, another raw guy, mammoth of a man, got called up late in the season after the Chiefs cut Jared Gaither, did not get into much action last season. But if he's able to take the next step, maybe he becomes the swing tackle. There's a lot of mysteries in who will actually be in that third tackle spot behind Albert and behind Winston. Could be a guy in-house right now. It could be a guy that's not on the roster right now. Or, you never know, it could be a guy like Jeff Allen who conceivably, if the Chiefs stick with Ryan Lilger at left guard and Lilger has a good camp and Allen's been really good, maybe he's the primary backup across the board except for at center. That's a possibility too because he did play tackle all through his college career.
And if you want to keep that running game going that we were talking about for so much, that's the flashy stuff you want to talk about, is the yards and all this other stuff. And you can't pick offensive linemen in fantasy football. You can't. But you can't be a successful team without a very successful offensive line. And one of that, not only do you have to have good, solid core players, you also have to have those guys like Jeff Allen that could swing around and play different positions. Listen, like these offensive linemen in the NFL are going up against the biggest, baddest, nastiest dudes in the some of the biggest, baddest, nastiest dudes in the world in NFL defensive linemen. 16 games a year, not to mention in practice every day against their own guys. So there will be injuries, you know, little tweaks, little here. I mean, that's just not jinxing anything. That's just a fact. You know, you hope if it's for a game here, a game there, you got to have a guy who's going to fill in because who knows? It gets late in the season. The Chiefs are playing really well. They got a opponent coming in that they've got to beat, but they got a guy go down. You want to be confident that in your game plan, you've got a guy you could throw in there in a Jeff Allen or in any other person that you could kind of shift around there and without literally missing a beat.
And we've taken care of pretty much all the position battles, except for tight end. You know, Tony Miyake's coming back. Kevin Boss is going to be a big part of this lineup. But, of course, everyone in the chat room, Brad, is talking about quarterback and that battle. Our man Rob Dude 80 says, Alex Trick Daddy Tanny, can't wait to see him in real situations. I think I share that view. It's going to be the second half of preseason games are going to be very interesting because you're going to get to see a battle for the number two job with Stanzi and Quinn. You're going to get to see that battle. You're going to see a guy who's going to be a fan favorite, who everyone's going to pull for, and see if he can just find a way onto this roster, beat the numbers game, figure out what he can do. And that's
talking about Trick Daddy?
Trick Daddy Tanny.
Is that a nickname or is that just something Rob made up?
The players, his teammates call him Tricky. And Brian Daboll has been known to call him Trick Shot out there. So, hey, Trick Daddy, we'll call him that. There's Trick Daddy right there. Can he make those YouTube throws in a game situation? Of course, Ricky Stanzi has a massive following. Our man Hestel here in the chat room says, I hope Stanzi catches fire. He throws a nice ball, and he's right. Stanzi does throw a nice ball. And then you've got, of course, the Matt Castle supporters like Matthew Mick Evers that said Castle can't go to the Pro Bowl this year. He'll be too busy getting ready for the Super Bowl. So that's what I am talking about, Matthew. Great attitude going in, and I think the quarterbacks are going to be a lot of fun to watch. Everyone wants to see Matt Castle do well. It's his team. He's going to have a bullseye on him all season long. But the second half of preseason games, Brad, it's going to be fun to watch. Quinn versus Stanzi, Tanny the dark horse guy trying to come in, find himself a roster spot in this league. It'll be a very cool training camp for the number two job and the backup quarterbacks. Let's go take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk defense on Chiefs Live, what you should look for this preseason at training camp and some position battles. We'll be right back.
I really love the sports lab. It's really fun.
I burned a lot of energy in a fun way, and I really learned a lot.
Have you heard of the Chief Sports Lab powered by Blue KC? To learn more, click on the banner to the right of this video.
I pull up to the game, and all I smell is barbecue. I see everybody with their jerseys on, just out tailgating. Everybody's yelling, honking their horns in their cars, offering me barbecue on the way before the game. I mean, everybody's just friendly. I mean, it's just a wonderful city to play football in, man. Our fans are good in the stadium and out of the stadium. They just treat everybody with respect, and you gotta love that. This city is built like a family.
Now we hope to see you all in St. Joe, Missouri, 1 week until Chiefs training camp starts. We're going to wrap up our Chiefs Live brought to you by your Midwest Ford dealers with some defensive talk, things to look at when you come to camp, or if you're not coming to camp, when you watch the Chiefs this preseason, position battles across the defensive side of the football. But there's also a position battle before we get into defense, Brad, going on right now on KCChiefs.com and KCChiefs50.com to sing the national anthem.
Nice segue.
How about that? It's a position battle between five kids. Yeah, that's why.
Booyah, says Stuart Scott. That was good.
That's why they paid me the big bucks.
Booyah.
The five finalists for Voice of the Kingdom. Now, we had 18 finalists over here at Arrowhead. Brad and I were both there.
On Saturday morning, yeah, it was cool.
Incredible talent.
Not literally. It was kind of hot outside, but the sun was hot, and so was the vocal action on the field.
So we've got down to five finalists.
And everyone was good. Everyone was awesome. So if you're out there and you were one of the finalists, I think I was running around shooting some stuff too. And every time someone came off, I was like, man, that was really good. Or if, you know, whoever it was, I was like, that was really good. And I'm not just saying that. A lot of these people were really good. So if you did make the finals, sorry. But I still thought everyone was really good.
I thought everyone was really good.
Tons of talent.
For people who didn't know about this competition, basically fans could submit their YouTube video, much like the sideline reporter gig we talked about, and get that in, by the way, the Rock the Mic, where I'll hand the sideline duties off to you for the second half of the Chiefs final preseason game in Green Bay. There's the Rock the Mic details. But for Voice of the Kingdom was similar. It was for our fans who were able to sing, and they'll sing. The winner of this vote, which is voted by you, will sing the national anthem for the Chiefs Seahawks on August 24th.
And there are five finalists. We can put the graphic back up.
Five finalists. Very good. And we can give a little bit of a rundown each. Ron Gutierrez is a former U.S. Army. He sang with them. He sung for the Bush administration. He sung for the Clinton administration. Manny Peck's a mother of three. You've got a quartet in Jones Boys. Michelle, a phenomenal voice right there, Brad. And then we've got kind of the country duet. So it's all kind of different.
It's a little bit of anyone. And I'm not trying to be partial here, but I'm a big Ron fan.
I'm a Ron fan as well.
Big Ron. The guy was great. And, you know, what's really interesting about the whole anthem singing contest, it's not like singing in the shower or in your car or wherever people sing. It's there's a considerable echo in an empty stadium.
Right. And there was no screw-ups.
And not one person, not one finalist, because you went through it twice, not one finalist messed up. And it was just, I couldn't believe it.
I can't even talk on that thing. I've tried, and I can't even, like, just have a conversation with you, because you hear it 2 seconds later across the speakers. It really throws your mind off.
These people are pros. And I think it's really cool that the team and the game day initiatives here that we're trying to do to involve a lot of the fans and the fan voting and stuff, I think it's going to be really special when this person comes up and the person does sing. It's going to be a really, really, really cool moment, not only for this fan, but all the fans involved. I mean, even if they were finalists or even if you just got to come out, a lot of people brought their friends and their family and all that stuff, and they were taking pictures and stuff afterwards. It's just a really cool, although there's one winner, it's a cool opportunity to even come out and sing, even if it's in front of people like you and me.
You can vote on KCChiefs50.com, and if you're in the Rock the Mic sideline reporter contest, eventually we'll narrow that down.
We need
five
entries.
Finalists.
We need tons of entries for
and,
that. Don't be shy.
And the fans will vote you in. So at the end of the day, it's fans voting for fans to take a big part in our games this season. Let's go defensive line, Brad. And number one, and when we go into training camp and talk, is Dontari Poe. Is he going to get the starting role for week one? If not, who is? It looks right now the Chiefs like Dontari in sub-package sets, playing next to Alan Bailey, two guys that can disrupt in a pass game and in pass situations. Poe did not get a lot of first-team reps. Of course, the pads weren't on in the base defense. The guys who he's competing with there, you've got Amon Gordon, a veteran who played very well for the Chiefs last year. Jarrell Poe, a former sixth-round pick who's still trying to find his way. And Anthony Toribio, who actually got a lot of reps and a lot of looks, who was on the practice squad last year with the first-team defense during the off-season program. And there's Amon Gordon right there. He's about to mop the floor on Tom Brady. Dontari Poe, I think, that without question, becomes the starter in the base defense. And I think gets an opportunity to be a three-down player between the base snaps and between the sub-package snaps he's going to get. But when does that come? And I think that's the big question going into camp. And what people want to see, what does this guy do? We know, look at him, he's a freak. But it's just like the combine when we saw him without pads on. How's it going to look when the pads come on and he's got to go up against the offensive lineman, practice in, practice out, and we see him in game situations. And if he shows that he is able to be just as big of a freak with the pads on as he has been without the pads on through these practices, through the combine, then there's probably no doubt he's going to be a week one starter for the Chiefs. If he has to have a little bit of acclimation period, which most rookie defensive linemen do, maybe he hits the starting lineup in week four, maybe week five, maybe week 10, who knows? Or maybe Amon Gordon's playing so well and Poe's getting 25 snaps a game in sub-package and has six sacks, and you want to keep him in there. It's interesting how they're going to approach this lineup on the defensive line.
And what's really interesting about Dontari Poe is I didn't even know that the guy played baseball, but then he goes out and wins the home run derby like 2 weeks ago, which is just absolutely amazing.
I thought you were serious for a second.
I was out of town with one of our fellow producers, Will Blackwell. We were at a restaurant, and up on the wall, they were interviewing Prince Fielder here in Coughlin, which was an awesome weekend. But he brought it to my attention that the guy looks just like Dontari Poe. Total side. We probably could have talked about that after the show. But I do love Dontari Poe, and I love what he brings to the table, to that offense, to the defense, rather. And it's going to be a really cool thing to see a lot of the young rookie guys come up, not just Dontari Poe, and I think you're going to get to this, but other younger guys, second-year guys like Alan Bailey. A lot of these, like, I saw a list, I think it was Sporting News or Yahoo Sports had Alan Bailey on a list of guys to watch.
ESPN.com yes. Yesterday, Football Outsiders writes for them. It's part of their, you have to be an insider and pay. Well, with the Chiefs, I kind of got to pay through that, so I posted their listing. I don't know
Save
if
yourself
like
$7.
Save yourself $7 and come to KCChiefs.com. I'll tell you what they say about Alan Bailey. Billed is one of the top 25 prospects in the league. The criteria was has to be under 26. Rookie deal, third round or later draft, and could not have started, had to start less than 5 games. Bailey ranks number 7 on their list of 25. So
and I would compare him, I would compare him, Alan Bailey's not the physical style of game or style of player they are, but a lot like Alan Bailey was last year, and you saw him really heat it up at the end of last season. You could ask Aaron Rodgers' forehead how great Alan Bailey started to progress towards the end of the year. But because both guys are both raw. They're raw.
Yeah, and Bailey's a guy who played a million.
And a lot of people, they say, "Oh, he's raw." That basically means he's not very good, but he's athletic. No, these guys are really athletic. They're really good. They produce, but they're freak athletes.
What does that mean?
They are just who works hard in the gym. These guys are gym. These guys are gym kings or whatever, because they're literally physically. They're so physically gifted that these guys can go in at a young age and produce. Because they have tools that, you know, are only given to you by the grace of God. You cannot work.
With Allen, that's for sure.
That's just the way these guys are. A lot of people, they're physical specimens. And seeing both of those guys on the same defensive line was so much upside. And they've proven themselves already. And it's going to be really exciting to see those guys.
The sub-package snaps, you've got two freaks lining up next to each other.
And I can't wait to see these two guys at camp. I remember Alan Bailey last year when I first saw that guy at camp. I couldn't believe it. The guy looked like he was wearing shoulder pads, but he wasn't. He was just wearing one of those jerseys. But the guy is so physically big. And when you see a guy that big move that fast, especially when you get up at training camp at St. Joe, which people should really check out, you're literally right up next to him. And you get to see how big these guys are and see how fast they are. That's why I'm excited to see Poe, because I wasn't at the combine this year. I didn't get to see him in person, but I'm really excited about that, too, just to see how he works and interact interacts with the rest of the team and doing drills and all that stuff. I can't wait to see it.
And Alan Bailey, a big shoes for him to fill. He's in line for more snaps. Wallace Gilbury, who was one of the Chiefs' kind of third down backup defensive lineman, defensive end pass rush specialist type guy, gone and is with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers now. So more room for Alan Bailey to crack into the lineup. Linebackers are studs. I'll touch on this position briefly because really it's down to who their backup's going to be. Maybe Brandon Seiler pushes Jovan Belcher. I would think that Belcher is pretty entrenched next to Derek Johnson after last season, and Seiler trying to come back from an Achilles surgery, which is nothing easy to come by. If Seiler's healthy and proves he can be healthy, he's a big addition to this inside linebacker group. He can play both positions. He can play special teams. You have a primary backup for both spots. Then your next position inside, you can keep a guy like Corey Greenwood, who has been a great special teams guy. Maybe a guy like Dexter Heyman jumps in there that's a developmental guy but can also hit on special teams. Outside linebacker, barring injury, your starters are set, Justin Houston and Tom Bahali. Of course, it's a pretty interesting position battle. Behind them, Andy Studebaker has gotten a lot of reps and some starts over the past few seasons in Kansas City. And then a pair of fifth-round draft picks, Cameron Sheffield and Gabe Miller, will both be battling for jobs behind Hali and Houston. So probably three guys. All name recognition, probably Miller the least because he was injured last year, but a fifth-round draft pick. So two draft picks and a guy who's played a lot for the Chiefs. Those three guys, if things stand pat with injuries not happening, you'll probably get three guys going for two spots. That's going to be an intense training camp battle. But the four guys across the line, especially the three in Houston, Hali, and Johnson, it doesn't get any better of a group than that, probably across the NFL, and Jovan Belcher does what they ask him to do, and that's be a thumper. And I know people look at him, and sure, you're going to kind of look like the number four guy when you've got three guys like that around you, but they ask him to be a hard-nosed guy and go up and blow up lead box. And there's a reason Derek Johnson broke the single-season tackle record last year. It was because of Tyson Jackson, Glenn Dorsey, and Jovan Belcher taking up those guys and free to make plays. Let's go to the cornerbacks, Brad, real quick. A guy who you and I were very impressed with this offseason. Flowers Route are going to be your starters on the edge, it looks like. But Jaleel Brown really stepped up and had a nice offseason program. Kind of took over that John McGraw role during the offseason that McGraw played last year, kind of that third safety slash hybrid corner slash do-it-all defensive back. Jaleel really seemed to come into his own this offseason.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see the progression that players make from the first year to the second year. Just like we were talking about earlier with Baldwin, is you see a guy come in, they don't have a full offseason, they're kind of trying to catch the bus while running, if you know, so to speak. Now that you have an offseason, you're going through all this, you know the players, you get to know them. So in the offseason, you interact more. You understand the playbook. It's the same defensive playbook. You're going through a lot of different things. And really, when it gets to be a second-year guy, especially in a specialty position like cornerback, is really when you see those guys step up. Brandon Flowers was that way, too. He's very good as a rookie, very proven coming out of Virginia Tech. But in year two, three, four is really when you start to see, especially a quarterback, get a lot of confidence. And confidence comes with time and age like that, but a guy like Jaleel Brown, you'll see their natural ability. I'm really excited to see
him. Yeah, he's going to the top of the line as well. Those guys going for sub-package jobs. Of course, Stanford Route will be a storyline. We've covered that plenty throughout this offseason, how he's going to fit in and the microscope he'll be under of fans wanting him to match Card's production. So we'll watch Stanford Route as well. On the back end of the defense, Eric Berry. That's where the conversation begins. That's where it ends. Eric Berry coming back. How much better the Chiefs are with Eric Berry coming back to play on the back line of that secondary. It's not even a conversation of how much better they are than last year when Eric Berry is in the game. This is a guy who's on the cusp of being maybe the best safety in football 2-3 years down the line from here. If he continues to do what he did as a rookie and stacks those seasons on top of each other, he's going to be known as a Troy Polamalu type of safety.
And after last season, he's hungry.
He's hungry, and the report came out, he's in phenomenal shape. We saw him this offseason. He looked great. He's a guy who can do it all. He picks off passes. He steps up in the box and run. He can blitz off the edge. There are few safeties in this league who can do what Troy Polamalu does, and Eric Berry is one of those guys. It's the Chiefs, if he's back and healthy, which it looks like he is 100% healthy and chomping at the bit to get back, that's a huge addition for the Chiefs. Kendrick Lewis will be back on the field as well. He missed the entire offseason program. More minor stuff for him. Had a little shoulder surgery and a pectoral injury from causing Tim Tebow to fumble in the season finale. And then Abram Elam is a guy on the back line who I think is the most underrated signing of the offseason. You're getting a starter to be your third safety or maybe push for a starting job. Maybe not. But we saw the Chiefs ran through six safeties in a starting role last season. And they got to points where they had guys. I mean, of those six, most of them aren't here anymore. McGraw's not here. Rashard Langford's not here. And neither is Sabby Piscitelli. So you look at those six guys.
It's always good to have extra guys for safety.
And we'll finish up here with Chiefs Live, Brad, as we move on. Because we got to move the set pretty soon to St. Joe.
You're moving so fast.
I am moving through defense so fast. It took so long on offense.
Whatever.
I've got to see, basically what the producers give me is a chart here, and it's like, spend 5 minutes here, and then I go through and I talk about Peyton Hillis and Jamal Charles for like 20 minutes, and it throws the whole show off. But
you've been doing it for 3 years, though. We're used to it. That's all good.
When do you talk special teams, what do you talk about? To me, you talk about one guy and one guy only, the Gaff, Thomas Gafford. Look, he's my man. We love the Gaff of this show. He's a big fan of Gaff. I'm just mentioning him so you can put a long snapper picture or B-roll. Do we have anything of the Gaff? We don't. I'm totally sorry, Thomas. Thomas watches the show, big fan of the show. We always want to give him mention because when you talk special teams, you got Dustin Colquitt, you got Ryan Succop, somebody everybody talks about, household names. The Gaff, the man who makes it all happen, never gets mentioned.
And you have no idea, having a player, all jokes aside, I mean,
I love Thomas Gafford.
I do too.
Love the dude.
Great dude. But I'm saying, you really, he becomes a really good player, and you know he's a really good long snapper when you don't even think about the guy. That's how you know he's good. He just goes up, he does his job, you never worry about it. It's automatic every time. And if you talk to Ryan or anyone else in the special teams, that's what they will tell you. He's 100% automatic every time at what he does. And that is the sign of a good long snapper, is if you're not talking about him, that means he's doing his job.
And he also has a pair of signed cleats at the Firehouse Subs. Kendall Gammon can say it. How many long snappers in their city have framed cleats, picture, signed Thomas Gafford in a local restaurant by the state? Not many.
That's probably true, Josh.
We'll see Thomas Gafford and more at Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. We hope to see you there. It's going to be a blast. It always is every single year. Make sure you say hey to me and Brad. Mitch Holdus will be there, the rest of the Chiefs live crew. It's going to be a busy preseason game with games moving in-house, the production. And, of course, as we said, rock the mic. Let's put up one more time before we head out of here, Kevin. Great producer Kevin Brebner here running the controls today. Rock the mic. We want you to be part of our broadcast team this preseason. Once in a lifetime experience. And I'd say if you're a college kid, if you're over 18, or even if you're out of college and you think you're good at this type of thing, put it in. But if you want to be, if what you want to be is in sports media, this is your demo reel right here. Because millions of people are going to see this. You're getting a chance to be the sideline reporter for a half in a live NFL broadcast game. You're going to get to interview players. You're going to get to talk about what's going down on the field. There is no opportunity. Nobody does anything like this. Nobody gives you this opportunity. We're doing it for the Chiefs' 50th season. You know what? If it goes well this year, we'll probably do it for every year going on out. So make sure you get your videos in. All the information is on kcchiefs50.com. You can go through, figure out, just make sure you're over 18 years old. That's the only major rule. And you'll come back and you get to do it at Lambeau Field. How amazing is that?
With this guy.
With me. You get to work with me.
And don't be intimidated either. I think a lot of people think they have to put together some Rich Eisen-esque demo reel for us to see it, which, if you want to apply, maybe we'll get you in there. But that's not fair. All I'm saying is don't be intimidated. If you want to do it, you want to try it. If you're kind of like, I don't know if I want to do that talking to buddies, just do it. Just do it. Apply. We need entries. We want to be able to pick from the best possible pool we can out there. Because at the end of the day, yeah, it's good for your career, it's good for this, but it's also, think about it, you're at Lambeau Field with the team you love on the sideline doing a job that millions of people are seeing. Saying that and then saying don't be intimidated, that's a little kind of jerk. But we need entries.
Maybe you're an engineer.
It'll be a lot of fun.
If you're
at home and you've ever just watched Josh and I and be like, these guys suck. These guys are idiots. They don't even know what they're talking about. Well, let me see if you know what you're talking about. Apply. Click. I'll
even
watch
if you don't want to be a sports broadcaster, if you're a Chiefs fan, that is priceless as well.
That'll be cool. That'll be fun.
So we'll see everybody at training camp. Again, Chiefs Live will come at you after every single practice of camp, 30 minutes each day. We'll tell you what's going on in St. Joe. Come with us. Check the site next week for show dates and times as we get a confirmed training camp schedule. We've already got the base of that schedule posted on KCChiefs.com. Foy, we'll see you next time live from St. Joseph, Missouri. Take care, everybody.